Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Approaching Memorial Day weekend. Things are getting serious. I'm Karen along with Jerry Remy. Remdog, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks. Always nice to kind of approach Memorial Day, that first milestone, and have your team be in the hunt. I mean, a lot of things can still go a lot of different ways. But, you know, you're about a third of the way through the season here, and the Red Sox are right in the smack of the race.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's come as a surprise to a lot of people, and, you know, maybe us included. We didn't know what to expect. Obviously, when we went to spring training, you know, a lot of new faces. How is this going to mix and match? And it's done very well so far. So it's been a lot of fun doing the games. It's been a lot of fun watching them. They've been winning in a lot of different ways. They've had their struggles at times. But, you know, the fact is, the good sign is everybody's bunched together in the division. And that, you know, nobody's been able to run away. Even Tampa Bay, who just went on this incredibly long winning streak, you know, couldn't run away with anything. They're still within a half game. So, you know, that's encouraging. And I got to believe if they can play this kind of baseball for 2 months, you know, that they can continue to play it. And if they stay healthy, they've got to keep pieces of the lineup healthy, keep pieces of the pitching staff healthy. And because their depth is not real great. And I think if they can do that, I think, you know, it's going to be a fun summer. I really believe that. I look at these teams that are all in contention, and they're all pretty evenly matched. And I'm getting a little concerned about the Yankees only because they're getting good pitching right now. And you know the offense is going to pick up at some point during the summer. So it's going to be a close race almost all the way through if things continue the way they are. And, I couldn't be more happy with the start the Red Sox have, because I didn't know what to expect coming out of spring training. I really didn't.
So the one thing about this team, offensively, we know they're good. We know they hit the ball. But they go in stretches, and we've talked a lot about the bottom of the order. But in a lot of ways, the whole lineup kind of goes through stretches where they start chasing. And I think we've seen it over the last week to 10 days. And I was looking at some numbers. If you look at the numbers, the chase rate outside the zone has gone up 4-5%. Their chase rate when they're ahead of the count, when a hitter's counts, they're chasing out, you know, they're expanding the zone. Does that concern you? Is that just something that ebbs and flows? Or is it something about this group of hitters that when they kind of fall out of whack? I mean, they had 12 more strikeouts last night. They're striking out a lot on a nightly basis. And we've seen it the last two games, right? Really good pitching. I get it. But it just seems that the swing and miss, the chase stuff, really kind of explodes on this team from time to time. And I think that's a concern they're going to have to keep an eye on.
It does. And it's been very consistent since the beginning of the year, you know, and Cora's been preaching all season long and all spring training with two, you know, men in scoring position with two strikes, make contact, stay away from the strikeouts, and they're striking out a bunch, but so is all of baseball, you know? So, I mean, how do you put it? How do you explain it? I don't know, but you know, it just seems to me that they go through these mini stretches of about three or four games where they, you know, they really do a great job, you know, when you got a man in scoring position or they got two strikes on them, you know, they just take a little base hit to the opposite field, or at least they make contact. They're just shorting up on their swing and they're not trying to do too much. Then they'll go all of a sudden, you know, like we've seen over the last couple of days where they're just, it's like they're trying to do too much. And I honestly believe that players get in that category where, you know, they see these situations out there and they want to clean everything up, you know, all by themselves. And it just doesn't work that way. You know, in baseball, they keep saying, keep the line moving. Well, the way you keep the line moving is by not making outs and by making contact with two strikes and keep, you know, something might happen. Something good might happen. I say that all the time on the broadcast. I hate strikeouts. I hate them. And the fact is, you know, if you can just make some contact, something good can come out of contact. Nothing good comes out of a strikeout. So that's one area that I'm sure Tim Hines and Ty Hines and Alex Cora have been preaching. And, you know, hopefully they get it, because you're right. I mean, they are going down like crazy over the last number of games. They're striking out big time numbers. They don't lead the American League in strikeouts, but they're close to it.
Last night. And, you know, and sometimes you get a crack at a great pitcher early in the game and you never get another look. And last night was the classic example. And And the first inning, bases loaded, nobody out. Xander Bogaerts strikes out. I'm never going to criticize Xander Bogaerts. Sometimes the pitcher beats you. He's had a great season. You can't ask much more from him. The double play, as you said at the time, there's not a whole lot J.D. Martinez could do. You're in your secondary lead. It's right there. You're thrown out. It's a double play. The one, I think, and then Jim Rice was fired up about a post-game show, was the second inning when you had the leadoff triple from Santana, the walk, met on the corners, nobody out, and Bobby Dalbec strikes out on three pitches.
Yes.
And it was fastball, fastball, curveball. And on that curveball, his foot was out. He was opened up, and it was a curveball that was outside of the plate, but he was committed to swinging before the thing left Charlie Morton's hand. I know he's a young hitter, but if Bobby Dalbec is going to be an everyday player, that's the challenge for Bobby Dalbec. The power's there. We know that. But when he gets, you know, opening up like that and the hips are flailing open and the bat's behind, he's not going to be able to do much. And that was where they needed him to – the infield was back. They were conceding the run. You just needed to put the ball into play. Even a double play brings in the run, and maybe that's a whole different game. Yeah. But the strikeout was the one thing you couldn't have, and that's what they got.
Jim's absolutely right on that. You know, I mean, that's exactly what we've been talking about. When you got two strikes on you, you got to do something different. I don't care if you're a big power hitter or not a power hitter. You know, you've got to change your swing a little bit to make contact. And that swing was not good at all. The backside was gone. Everything was gone. He was selling out on an inside breaking ball or whatever he was looking for inside. And you can't do that with two strikes. You got to protect the whole plate. And you got to figure out some kind of way, you know, if there's a ball on the outside part of the plate where I can flick it and maybe even just flick it foul and see another pitch. So, yeah, that, you know, and he's going to strike out a bunch anyway. We know that. We know that. But, you know, in situations like that, you can't be striking out. You can't do it. It just costs your team, you know, a lot. And it cost the Red Sox a lot last night because they had Charlie Morton on the ropes early, which is very unusual to have a guy like that on the ropes early in a game. And they let him off the hook, and then he became Charlie Morton again. And that was the end of the Red Sox offense for the rest of the night. So, you know, you got to somehow – I you know, Dalbec's a tough case for me because he's so tall, he's so big, he's so lanky. You know, there's a lot of moving parts in that swing. And I know he wants to hit the ball out of the ballpark bad, but in certain situations, you're as valuable hitting a ground ball at second base as you are hitting the ball out of the ballpark because it just keeps everybody coming up. And, you know, I wish I had an answer, you know, to why that is. And I just think he's a young kid right now trying to do too much with opportunities that are presented to him. He wants that 3-run home run instead of just getting that, you know, one little ground ball at second base that might get one run in and keep that inning alive and get somebody up there who makes better contact. So, you know, I've seen some improvement, not as much as I would like at this particular time. And, you know, it's something that he has to really get down to work on. And I think Jim's absolutely right. He was in terrible shape to even try to make contact on that pitch. So, you know, that's not good. You know, when you get men on base, I mean, you got to bear down and you have to, you know, concentrate fully on just making contact. And you can't predict where the ball's going to go. Just make contact. It might even be a 3-dribble down on third baseline. It doesn't matter. You know, you've done something and it's going to be action.
So the good news in that inning was that Danny Santana, the triple, a little help when he got stuck under the wall, obviously, but this is a guy who's had an immediate impact. Brian O'Halloran, general manager, joined me on the pregame show Tuesday, and I asked him about the impact Santana's had and the decision with Christian Arroyo's return to send Michael Chavis down to Worcester. Here's what he said.
We're joined by Red Sox general manager Brian O'Halloran here at Fenway Park. Brian, Christian Arroyo back today. That's good news. Guy who's been hitting the hand a couple of times, going to play with a little bit of a shield there. Hopefully that'll protect him a little bit now.
Yeah, it's good to have Christian back. He did a nice job for us early in the season. Had the unfortunate, you know, two hit by pitches basically in the same spot right in a row there. But he's back and ready to go.
You know, as he comes back, the second baseman, Arroyo, who has played well for you, Michael Chavis is sent back. What does Michael Chavis have to work on to be an everyday contributor here at this level?
Yeah, I mean, this time it's really just a numbers game, and so Michael's headed back to Worcester. He's done a nice job defensively, you know, still working on his approach, you know, making sure he has a consistent approach at the pitches he swings at and making more contact. But he's a good player. I'm sure we'll see him again.
You know, and he's not the first guy to, as you said, the numbers game and kind of be on that shuttle up and down. Young guys coming into their own, obviously learning that part of the game. Has he handled all that as well as you could hope?
Yeah, he's been great. Like everybody else, he wants to be in the big leagues, and he worked very hard in the offseason and spring training. And, of course, when things don't work out and you get sent to AAA, you're disappointed, but that just made him work even harder. So he's handled everything very professionally and very well.
Danny Santana certainly made a great first impression over the weekend. And this is a guy who went through a scary thing, the infection of the foot. I mean, that's not a normal baseball injury. How gratifying is it to see a guy who gets through something like that, puts in the work, and then gets a chance to pay it off?
Yeah, it's great, especially, he had as you mentioned, the foot infection, but prior to that, he had had elbow surgery that he had been battling through, battling back from and rehabbing back from, and just as he was getting ready to, take the field and ramp up baseball-wise, he had the foot infection when he arrived in spring training. So that was unfortunate and scary, but he ended up being okay, put his work in Fort Myers and then up the chain and performed well on his rehab assignments, and here he is making an impact in the big leagues. It's exciting and gratifying.
It's an interesting pitching matchup tonight. You got Morton and Richards, two guys who are free agents this offseason. Richards has pitched so well after that early adjustment. Is this the guy you and the organization envisioned, had hoped you were getting when you signed him this offseason?
Yeah, Garrett's been a really good major league pitcher whenever he's been on the mound. He's obviously had a few injuries over the years, but he's been an excellent major league starting pitcher for a number of years. Obviously, got off to a little bit of a rough start with some control issues, but as you pointed out, he made an adjustment, a few starts ago, and has been outstanding since then. And so, yeah, this is exactly what we hope for.
He one of several starting pitchers who've been giving you longer starts now. Was that part of the ability to go back to 13 pitchers, 8 relievers, and add the extra position player?
Yeah, certainly the fact that the starters have generally given us consistently enough innings and more in some cases lately, that has made it easier to go back to 13. We also have a couple off days here, it's always a balance. You want to have a deep enough bench to give Alex chances to win the game in different ways, but you also need enough pitching. So right now that's where we stand, and that definitely helped with the starters going deeper.
And such a massive stretch coming up now. We talked about at the beginning of the show, 21 games now against teams that made the playoffs last year. That depth will be put to the test here over the next few weeks, won't it?
Yeah, we're in a tough division, obviously. We had a good road trip, and still, Tampa Bay, we find ourselves looking up at Tampa Bay because they've won 11 in a row, which is, it's amazing for them. But hopefully we can stay on a roll ourselves, and there are other really good teams in the division. We, play a bunch of good teams coming up. This isn't going to be easy, but we're going to continue battling and hopefully continue to play well.
And Brian, before we let you go, normally we'd be ramping up the draft talk this time of year. It's in July now. What does that extra month give your scouting department in the process here, and what does that do for an organization to have that much more time to evaluate?
Yeah, it's interesting because last year was so strange with, almost no amateur baseball after the shutdown. And that continues to impact this year because you got fewer looks on players from last year. You don't have quite as much history as you normally would have. That's somewhat mitigated by the extra month, although some high school seasons are ending. But it does give you the opportunity to see all the postseason college baseball, which is helpful, and just gives you more time to go through your process with your scouts. So it's definitely helpful to have the extra month, and it's different.
And it'll give us more time to ask you about it, which we will do in the weeks ahead. Brian, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks, TC.
Okay, let's start back with Danny Santana. I'm sure you loved what you've seen with him, and I think the speed. He can hit, obviously, and he's good defensively at a few positions, but this team hasn't had that speed element on the base pass. He gets on the base pass, he can get a pitcher's head, can he?
Yeah, he can. Last night was a great example of hitting that triple. I know the ball got stuck under the wall, but to be able to go three bases on that was, I was watching him. Once I saw the ball get stuck, I looked up and see him, and he was going good, better than I thought. He runs better than I thought. I knew, they kept saying he could run, but he's quicker than I thought he was. So, yeah, that brings an added element to the club. You get late in the ball game, you get the potential tying run at first base. You can pinch run right there and get him in where he can score from first base. So, when he's not playing, when he's not starting the game. So there's a lot of different things he can do. And as a guy that's played so many different positions, I kind of lost track of him for a couple of years. I remember him with Minnesota, and I always thought he was a pretty good shortstop. And then all of a sudden he's with these different clubs playing different positions. And I didn't realize he became the super utility guy. And, you know, from what we've seen so far, he's handled center field fine. He's handled second base fine. And that's pretty much where we're going to be seeing him at those positions. And he's not afraid up there. I mean, he swings that bat, you know, and he's got a couple of home runs. He had that line drive last night. So, I think he's a really good addition. I think it's something they need because they don't have base stealers. And they're not, you know, I don't mean to say that they're going to steal bases. They're not going to, nobody in baseball steals bases anymore. It's become, you know, not part of what the offense is. But he is a guy that can go first to third, can go first to home on balls in the gap. And I think that's very important, you know, to have on a ball club. And he's a veteran guy. He's been around the block a few times, so he kind of gets it, you know. And it's always better to have a veteran guy in those spots, I think, than a young kid. Because when a young kid gets in there, they're trying to do too much, you know, with that one opportunity. A veteran understands what his job is and what they want him to do. And as long as he does his job, he's happy. So they'd all like to play more, obviously. They would all like to play all the time. But I love those veteran guys in those utility roles, those guys that move around a lot, because they know what their job is. And so they're completely satisfied at what they're doing. And I think Santana finally found himself in that kind of spot.
The other part of what Brian O'Halloran talked about there is Michael Chavis. I don't think it's a big surprise that he's the one who got sent down for Arroyo. They're both second basemen. But you could have made the argument that maybe Franchy Cordero needed to go down, but then Franchy Cordero hits one 700 feet on Sunday, and you get a reminder. But with Chavis, Brian O'Halloran saying all the right things, that it's a numbers game, and I thought he hit a little better this time around. I thought, you know, he gave him a little spark in the leadoff spot. That game he had a couple of doubles. That was a nice outing. But there's still 13 strikeouts while he was there. I think he was hitless with runners in scoring position. What does Michael Chavis need to do to get back and be part of this? Or is there going to be a spot for him on this team? I'm sure he'll get a chance somewhere, but will it be the Red Sox?
I'm not sure, you know, because he hasn't shown me in the few years that he's been around here the ability to make adjustments with his swing. And, you know, there are two ways they get him out consistently. And that's obviously the most obvious is the high fastball. But they throw him breaking balls down, then he doesn't have a chance, you know, unless it's in the strike zone. If it's in the strike zone, he could do some damage on it. But once it gets below the knees, he's a swing and miss guy. So he needs a major overhaul in his swing. And I don't know if he's capable of doing that, you know, as long as he's been doing what he's doing right now. But, you know, when they look at him on film, the opposition, I mean, it's pretty clear where you're going with the baseball. You got a game plan against him. It's not difficult to figure out. You just got to watch, you know, a couple of at-bats, and you can see that he can't handle a pitch down that's out of the strike zone. He chases it, and he can't handle a pitch up because he'll chase that too. And the only pitch that he really handles well is that thigh-high fastball, and he can murder that thing. And that's the frustrating part about it is that, you know, you see that power, that raw power that he's got. I love the way he plays the game. He hustles all the time. You know, he's diving in the bases. But he's got these weaknesses at the plate that just don't seem to be getting any better. And how do you correct that? I really think they've got to revamp his swing. You know, I really do, to where he's getting on top of the baseball a little bit more and kind of losing this uppercut swing that he's had since he's been with the Red Sox, because it's not working. And if it doesn't work, you've got to do something to change it. And he still has time to do that. He's a kid. He's a young kid. But, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do. Not when you're locked in with one thing for a long time. But you got to sit down and realize as a player, hey, this is not working. So I've got to try something else. And if somebody comes up with a good suggestion for him, he's got to try it, because this is not going well for him at all.
One thing I want to ask, we've got a great conversation with Nathan Eovaldi coming up in a second. But before we get to that, the other thing last night was that Marcell Ozuna slide into the shoe, into the cleat, and he immediately holds up his fingers, and they're all bent in the wrong direction. And they said two dislocated fingers sent into Atlanta to make sure it's nothing worse. First of all, when you see that, that's as gruesome as it gets. And you ever have – did you slide head first? I can't even remember.
Often. I did later on in my career when my knee was really bad, because I couldn't bend it all the way to be able to slide the regular way. But no, we tried to avoid that as much as possible. And it's become a natural thing in baseball now to slide head first. And, you know, I kind of get it. I always fought myself when I was playing, because I always felt like I was getting there sooner. I could see the base. I could see first base. I could dive, you know, and I felt like I was reaching it sooner. Now, whether I was or not, I don't know. Nobody's ever timed it, you know. But they always say it's quicker to run through the bag, but I still need proof of that, you know? So, but yeah, those head first slides are dangerous. So many bad things can happen, you know?
And I think you see it more now with replay because they feel they can reach around and do the swim move. And there's all these ways to avoid the tag, right?
You know, they're very talented and creative in what they do to get to the bag. I mean, they really are, but it's you can see the danger that it provides. And, you know, I remember seeing guys slide head first on a home plate. I said, what are you, crazy? I said, this catch is wearing all this equipment and stuff, and you're going to get crushed, you know, doing something like that. So it's something that's become part of the game. We have to accept it like we do everything else. But it's a very dangerous thing, and we saw that last night. Now, how long are they going to lose Ozuna for? Probably a long time. And that's not good, obviously, for the Atlanta Braves. But it's so commonplace in baseball right now that everybody's doing it. And it's become basically the way people slide. It's amazing. You know, they're sliding head first when there's no play on them at home plate. You know, it's crazy. I mean, so
did you ever have? Like, I was talking to Jim about, you know, he had the wrist in 75, right? He missed the playoffs because of the wrist. And we were talking a lot about it yesterday with Christian Arroyo coming back, and he's got the new. He's trying to wear a new guard that they custom made, but he said it's not easy to have that guard on your hand. You know,
no.
Did you ever have any hand injuries? I mean, I know you had all the knee issues.
No, I had some hand injuries, but I never wanted to put on any of that equipment. I just didn't feel comfortable to play, you know, with a shin pad on. They tried that a couple of times because I had a bad bone bruise, you know, down near my foot. And they used to try to put that on me. I said, take this off. I can't. I just don't feel right with it. You know, now it's very common. I mean, everybody wears all kinds of gear, and I guess they feel very comfortable with it. But we as a group, there were very, very few guys who wore anything at all on their elbows or their shoulders or their, you know, the most common was down around your shin. You know, if you had banged one off your shin, then you might come out the next day and have that protected. Yeah, or try to protect it as best you possibly can. But a lot of guys didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I just felt like I had something on me that wasn't supposed to be there, that I didn't feel loose and I didn't feel correct playing. And I, you know, it's kind of a generational thing. And now they've got, you know, everything. And I mean, guys try to get hit now, you know, so I mean, right. It's not like Ron Hunt. Was it Ron Hunt that used to be with Montreal? And
that's right.
He got hit with everything.
And Don Baylor with the Sox, right?
Don Baylor, they didn't wear any equipment. They just got hit, you know. So now you got guys putting their elbows in strikes in the strike zone for crying out loud. It's crazy.
We saw that. Okay, I want to get to this Nathan Eovaldi interview. He joined me yesterday, named the Jimmy Fund captain, taking the place of Brock Holt, who took the place, obviously, of Mitch Moreland before that. And it's been a great history of players taking that role. But I also talked to him about his season, what he's been doing. And we started by talking about the 8-pitch walk he took Saturday and Eduardo Rodriguez, who still can't buy a hit, and what it's like for these pitchers to hit. So here's Nathan Eovaldi.
Nathan Eovaldi joining us. Nate, we want to have you on here to talk about a few things. First and most importantly, your incredible command of the strike zone as a hitter. Obviously, we begin there with the walk the other night. The 8-pitch walk, you know, and all joking aside, it's a scoreless game. You grind out a good at-bat. What did that feel like? Because you haven't been on base a lot over the course of your opportunities.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it felt good. I didn't go up there with much expectations, honestly. I mean, try to put the ball in play. I was late on a couple of pitches, and I think it's just kind of knowing what I can handle. I can't handle the high fastball or the low one, so fouling off the ones I could, and I was able to work a walk right there.
You know, they've really given – AC's given a hard time to E-Rod, Eduardo Rodriguez. Did he bring you in maybe now to consult with E-Rod for next time he has to bat in a National League game?
I mean, Eddie kind of brings it upon himself, though. He talks a big game in batting practice. He did put on a good show, but, I mean, during the game, you were able to see what he did. So he's not afraid to admit that he hasn't gotten a hit in one of the games. But, I mean, his batting practice is pretty impressive.
Will you go with the Barry Bonds earring next time now that you had the on-base opportunity?
No, I won't. I won't be rocking the Bonds earring.
Doesn't look like your style. The way this season has gone for you, coming into the season, you talked a lot about the work you did this offseason on all your pitches, and we've seen it over the course of your starts this year. Tell me, when you have that much of an arsenal, and we've talked about this before, and year to year, some pitches may be better than others, but even start to start, you know, you reach in your bag, not everything's there on a given day. How has it gone for you start to sort of been able to harness that entire arsenal along with the fastball?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest challenges I face. I'd like for my splitter to be a little bit more consistent, but the one pitch I feel like that's really been there for me that hasn't, or maybe I haven't used as much this year or in the past, has been my curveball. I've been throwing it for, you know, getting that first pitch strike with it so that I'm keeping the hitters off my fastball. And then I'm able to, you know, try to get the splitter going in those counts as well. And then I can, I've been mixing the curveball in there a little bit later in counts as well. So it's that pitch right there has been helping me out the most. I've been throwing the slider a little bit more. I haven't been getting the results I want on it, but it's nice having, you know, the four or five pitches where I can go to, you know, use them in the different locations, different counts of the at-bats and keeping the hitters off balance. I think that's what's helped, you know, with me keeping the ball in the ballpark as well.
Do you feel right now, not to talk about any one pitch in particular, but the depth of your arsenal is as deep as it's ever been?
Yeah, absolutely. That and then just mixing them all in and throwing them all for strikes, you know, keeping them in the strike zone, keeping the hitters off balance. You know, like you said, it's, you really don't, you know, obviously you hope all the pitches are going to be working that day. And I mean, most of the times, those are the really good days that are, you know, it's fun to go out there and pitch and compete. But the other times, you know, you've got to navigate your way through. And, you know, it may not be there at the beginning of the game, but it'll be there towards the end. And, you know, you just kind of have to navigate your way through it sometimes.
Yeah, this weekend at Fenway Park, we'll have a full crowd on Saturday. Kind of a reminder how far we've gotten here through all of this. Have you thought about that, what it's going to be like to pitch here again with 38,000 fans?
Yeah, I'm super excited about that one. You know, we got the Marlins Saturday night. I'll be on the mound, so, you know, I'll be able to have that first night with the full crowd and having them all back in Fenway. And, you know, even with it, when it first started, we had 4,000, 5,000 fans. It felt like it was packed. And then it up, you know, we allowed the up to 10,000. And I mean, it's just amazing having our fans and their support backing us. And the way we've been playing baseball this year is, you know, compared to last year, I mean, it goes to show like how much our fans mean to us. And I'm definitely looking forward to having them all out there.
You know, and I was thinking about it for you. That's perfect that you get the Saturday because, you know, last year, all of us, right, no fans, and we're all going through whatever we were going through. The year before, you were going through all the injuries and then trying to come back as a reliever and all of that. So it's really kind of, for you, I think, kind of full circle. Back on the mound, feeling healthy, big crowd, you know, midseason, Red Sox in playoff contention. Kind of a nice place to be here on Memorial Day weekend, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing for me, I think, is being healthy, feeling good, and, you know, the guys are all playing, we're all playing good baseball. So, you know, to be able to give that back to our fans, I think that's going to be the most exciting thing for us Saturday.
I want to ask you a couple of things real quick. Chris Sale, we hear he's ramping up. You've been through this a couple times. But what's it like for him right now where he's at? When you were coming back from Tommy John, you know, that just being able to throw now and getting up on a mound, how much does that mean to a guy like Chris Sale who's finally starting to feel like a pitcher again?
I mean, we've been exchanging texts every now and then. I don't want to, you know, be on him too much about it. But for me, this was the best part. You know, you put in all this work to get to this point, and then now it's going back to the things that, you know, is the most comfortable for you, and that's going out there and playing baseball again. So, you know, him being able to get back on the mound and, you know, it's you see the light at the end of the tunnel and you're feeling really good about it. So it's going out there and, you know, finally trusting in all that work. And, you know, you're not going to be thinking about getting injured again because of all the hard work that you put into it. And, you know, Sale's one of the hardest workers that we've had and, you know, hardest workers around the game. So to be able to have him coming back towards the end of the season, it's going to be great for us.
You know, I also wanted to ask you, there seems to be this growing talk in baseball about making life tougher for pitchers, right? You want to move the mound back. You want to band shifts. Mm-hmm. We hear the hitters talk a lot about it. We don't hear the pitchers talk about it. Are you worried at all for you and for pitchers in general about where this could all be going? Do you keep a close eye on that, or do you sort of try to block out all the noise because nothing's been decided yet?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of try to block out all the noise. I mean, the game's been played, you know, one way for so many years. I don't think it's going to be changing anytime soon, especially with moving the mound back. I don't know. I try not to have, you know, too much say into it because I think it's going to take a lot. It's going to be a huge decision to try to move the mound back, you know, something again that, you know, every ballpark, you know, there's been certain ballparks that have been too big where they move the fences in a little closer, you know, for the hitters, but I don't think it'll fall through with anything happening with pushing the mound back.
You know, and there's been a lot of talk about more and more guys throw with more velocity and have greater stuff. You've always been one of those guys, right? You've got velocity, but you've got multiple pitches. It seems to me that good pitching doesn't necessarily have to sacrifice command. You've been a guy who's been able to harness all of that. But is that an ongoing battle to keep that command to go along with the velocity and the stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially, you know, getting a little older too, I think a lot of it comes to listening to your body. And, you know, there's times where you can try to overdo something, and it turns out, you know, you're creating bad habits and you're not as efficient as you were before. You know, I've had a couple of those experiences already this year where my mechanics, you know, I'm trying to do too much on the mound, and, you know, it's causing my velocity to dip down a little bit. And then I step off the back and kind of regroup and regain control, you know, with my mechanics a little bit more, try not to do as much. And it comes out a lot, you know, it comes out harder than when I'm trying to do too much. So I think that's always one of the challenges. You're out there, you're competing, you got the fans again, and it's, you know, you got to stay within yourself and be able to execute.
Okay, I want to ask you about the Jimmy Fund, because you're the honorary Jimmy Fund captain here this year, and it's such an important role. Mm-hmm. We've done so much with the Jimmy Fund over the years, the telethon, all of that. But you've become, you know, it's hard to believe 4 years now, and you're such a big part of this team and this community. What about the Jimmy Fund resonated with you? Why did you want to take this on?
You know, coming over here for the first time, and I got to see the way Brock interacted with all the fans, you know, the kids at the hospitals, all the patients, things like that, and how much it meant to the Red Sox when they reached out to me this spring training and asked if I would, you know, want to be the guy. I was like, you know, I didn't hesitate one time. I feel like cancer's touched us all in, you know, so many different ways, and to be able to try to help out and try to fill in their shoes of, you know, I got to see Brock and Mitch, get to see the way they interact with everybody to try to raise money and just raise awareness as well to cancer. It was a big deal to me.
You know, you mentioned those two guys, and they obviously did such a great job. But it seems to me like as soon as somebody gets here, they, as a member of this team, of this organization, you kind of learn about the Jimmy Fund right away, right? It's such an amazing partnership, and it doesn't take a lot to get you guys to help out when you can, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're able to play on such a, you know, a big platform and, you know, raise awareness to so many other different situations and things like that. And to be able to, you know, try to do just a little bit of what they were able to accomplish and, you know, make the kids smile or anything else that we can do to, you know, ease the things that they're going through. It's, you know, I think that's why all of us, we kind of just jump at it and, you know, we're willing to do whatever we can to help them out.
You know, when you're a dad, obviously you watch your kids grow. Does it even make it a little more personal seeing other kids go through something like that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it makes you, you know, you're extremely thankful for the things that you have, and, you know, even, you know, getting to see their outlook on, you know, the way that they're handling a tough situation and stuff. It's really eye opening. And, you know, it's an honor definitely to be a part of the Jimmy Fund Foundation and try to help out.
You mentioned Brock Holt, tough act to follow. Do you have to go to the handlebars now to kind of keep his tradition going, or?
Yeah, the handlebars, the t-shirts. I mean, it's a big role to follow, but, you know, I'm going to try to do my best and do whatever I can to help out.
Well, we're so honored to have you be part of that legacy. It's such an amazing place, and we look forward to being able to have the telethon this year with everybody back together. We appreciate the time, Nate. Good luck with the rest of the season. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So great stuff there on the Jimmy Fund. We'll be talking a lot more about that as we get to the telethon later this summer. Nice that we'll be able to bring that back the way we're used to. But I thought it was interesting, Jerry, when he was talking about how he works in the offseason to get those second pitch. And the curveball, right, has become part of his arsenal, maybe more than it ever has before. But he's really, when he's on, and he's been on more often than not, he's a complete pitcher right now.
Yeah, he is, you know. And sometimes I think in certain games he doesn't need all of his pitches. He's got so many. He's got five pitches. And to me, you know, when you go in a game, I think you're pretty lucky if you get two of them working. I mean, if you, they're really working, and I think that you basically stay with what's working for you. But what he's got is the options now. If something's not going for him early in the game, he can go to a couple of other pitches and see if that's going to be effective for him. So he's got plan A, plan B, plan C, and, you know, he's able to pull that off. I personally would like to see him throw his fastball, which is 98, 99 to 100 miles an hour, up in the zone a little bit more. I think he would get more strikeouts by doing that, just like everybody else in baseball right now. But yeah, he would be tough for me to face because I wouldn't know what to expect from him. You know, he's, like you said, He's got that split. He's got the curveball. He's got the fastball. He's got the cutter. You know, he's got all kind of pitches. So when you're up there, you just don't know what to expect from him. And he has that option on the days that he doesn't have maybe two of them. He's got at least three of them working for him. So, you know, that's a great thing. And I think it's a great thing to have in your pocket. But you don't need all five every game. You know, you got to find the best ones. You got to find the best ones that are working for you on that particular day. Go to work with those and try to win the game. But the one thing I'd love to see him come out blasting, you know, with that 98, 99, 100 up in the zone consistently, you know, and then drop his curveball on people. I think strikeout numbers would go way up.
Almost what Matt Barnes has been doing in the ninth inning, right? Exactly. He's gone to that fastball first, and then you drop the
He's got the same kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, before we wrap it up here, I thought it was also pretty cool. He gets the ball Saturday, he said, against Miami. Going to be the first full capacity. We'll see what the actual number is, but no more restrictions. Have you thought about that, what it's going to be like? He clearly has thought about it, thinks it's going to be so cool for that buzz to be back. But it's been a long time. You know, September 2019 was a long time ago, and it's been nice. 9,000, whatever it's been, has felt like a lot more, obviously, but it's going to be a little strange to see that and feel that buzz on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm very excited about it, but I know the players got to be really excited about it because I give them tremendous credit for what they've done over the last couple of seasons to this point. You know, the play in front of nobody is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. You get no feedback, you know, you get no momentum, you get no, there's nobody cheering you on or booing you, you know, in other ballparks, which you kind of relish because you can shut them up, you know, and now they're going to get the opportunity to see Fenway at its best. And Fenway's always at its best when there's a full house and the Red Sox are playing good and they get excited and they get, you know, and they're going to be guys on this team that have never seen that here. So I think I'm excited for them. And as I said, you know, I don't think those guys, you know, the whole league, I don't think they get enough credit for what they went through last year and what they've probably gone through, you know, most of this year, which has been a little bit better, but still not the same. Now they're going to get back to the same baseball, the regular baseball, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I know I'm looking forward to it as an announcer, and I can imagine how much they're looking forward to it as players.
Maybe it'll help the home record too. They're still at 500 at home, and they're going to have to change that if they're going to go anywhere. Somebody last year, one of the opponents said it wasn't intimidating playing at Fenway Park without fans. It was just another ballpark. So like, maybe that intimidation comes back.
It's like playing in a playground. It was like playing in a playground all year.
This is going to be fun. Saturday night, full crowd, but more business before that. Rem, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Thanks, my friend.
All right, TC. Have a good day.
You too. See you in the ballpark. Jerry Remy with us, the TC and Jerry podcast. Wrapping up another week. We'll see you next week. Enjoy Memorial Day.